Welcome to the NBA Panel with your host, John Witherspoon. The NBA Panel covers the league to keep you up to date with NBA news, movements, and stats. Join us as we discuss the sport that we love, the NBA. And now, here's your host, John Witherspoon.
Yes, welcome to the NBA Panel, episode 119. I'm your host, John Witherspoon, with the panel members. We'll keep updated with all things NBA. Man, we have a show for you today. First, let's get caught up on these 2019 NBA playoffs. Updated bracket is in the East. We have the Bucks up 2-0 right now. We have the Raptors up 2-1 on the Magic. We have the 76ers up 2-1 on the Nets. We have Boston Celtics. They're about to sweep the Pacers. In the West, we have the Juggernaut, Golden State. They're up 2-1 on the Clippers. Denver Nuggets are down 1-2 to the Spurs. No Popo is working his magic. We had the Blazers up 2-1 OKC. OKC had a must-win last night. We had the Rockets up 2-0 on Utah. So these playoffs are heating up. Today, man, we have a show for you today. I'm joined by one of the original kings of comedy, comedian, actor, writer, producer, director, Cedric Entertainer. Cedric, man, thank you so much for joining me today. Let's just get right to it. So how was your transition between actor and producing? Because I'm a producer myself. You're actually on one of my first productions, and I'm honored to have you on here, the NBA panel. How was your transition from being an actor to producer?
I think, you know, it was kind of a natural flow. I mean, when you start to think about, like, actually having, you know, vision of what it is that you want to see and what it is that you want to participate in, you know, it was one that, you know, I needed to have a lot more control of concepts and then how to get, you know, get that job done. And so, you know, you learn right as you go, of course, you know, because you have, you know, like anybody, when you don't do the job, it seems like produce something, you're like, well, hold on, man. Why everybody telling me no right now? So, right, you know, you that kind of wherewithal, that kind of, you know, solving problems, putting the puzzle together, and then making sure you get what it is, you know, that out of something that it is that you're trying to accomplish. And so that's what I enjoy. I like that. I like doing it for others now. So we start to produce, you know, some other shows, not just where I'm involved in them, but, you know, for other people and creative ideas. And right, so I enjoy that as well, as much as I do entertaining people myself.
Yes, exactly. I feel exactly what you're saying. I actually started up on a second production also, and I'm going to have a full panel of different members on it. I'm going to give someone else an opportunity to meet great players and everything else. So I love producing also. Yeah. Is there a favorite?
Man.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, I was just like, no, I agree with you.
Is there a favorite movie you've ever done? You've done so many. And I was just talking, I loved you in Barbershop 2. I mean, you've done so many movies. Is there a favorite one you've done?
You know, probably for me, always lean towards Barbershop 1. Mainly because it was a role that, you know, I had to go get. Like, they wanted me to play a different role in the movie, and I wanted to play the older dude. And then it was one of these things that I kind of already had envisioned that would change my life if I was able to pull it off, and it did. Right. It was one of these movies that, you know, when people saw me, I became a real player in Hollywood for playing this character. And, you know, and it was funny, and it was dramatic at times, right, you know. So, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, because when you're a comedian, often you just kind of, you know, put into one category and pigeonholed into just doing these kind of big comedic roles. But when you get a chance of doing both, that's always great, man. And so that's what I loved about that particular character and that movie. It just was, you know, it was real. It was like real to our culture, and, right, and it just told an authentic story, man. So
definitely.
I definitely had others that I loved, you know, like Be Cool and the other great characters and Talk to Me.
Right.
These are fun characters that I've loved playing and would love to, you know, would rock them again if ever they did a sequel.
Yeah, you worked with a bunch of great other actors. I think you and Ice Cube have a great chemistry. Would you say he's one of the best, one of the actors you have a good chemistry with?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, Cube is one, you know, he's just a legend in his own, you know, own right. But he's, you know, he's one of these guys that's really, like you say, you know, accommodating to other actors. He looks for, you know, these opportunities for you can shine, and he'll let you shine,
right.
And he wants you to shine. And then, you know, and then, but, you know, as a producer on the shows, with on these movies where he's the man, he also a guy that's, you know, like, all right, cool, let's get the work done. Let's do our day and make sure that we stay on budget, stay on, you know, so it ain't about just jokey jokes and having fun, you know, he'd be about that business. So I learned a lot from him. You know, just producing wise, and you know what it is to be a leader when you're on a film set or a TV set.
How do you feel about his transition as a businessman in his league, the Big Three? I mean, it's only growing bigger into his third season.
Yeah, you know, and I went to support it. You know, several games I went, you know, to check it out, and of course, you know, it's really a fun idea when you think about it, because some of these players, you know. Of course, they had to retire from the game early, but they still love the game that they played their whole life. And so for us, we get to see the people that we know and you know, grew up, Catino Mobley, and, you know, and just guys that's out there hooping. They'll be like, ah, that's my guy right there. Like, you know, I remember when he used to play. Like, so, you know, and I think that, you know, it makes for fun entertainment when you think about, you know, nothing but the Harlem Globetrotters, if you will. And then, you know, it was one little run with the N1 kind of street ball stuff that worked. You know, this idea just seemed like a natural family entertainment brand. And Q, you know, he stuck to his guns and fighting through it, and is catching on, I believe. So he's, you know, I'm happy for those kind of transitions and to see him try things that he's enjoying and for them to be successful.
Definitely, definitely. You hosted BET Comic View and Def Comedy Jam, two of the biggest venues that launched some of the biggest comedic careers. What's your take on those platforms and how they helped launch some people's careers? Because a lot of big names came through. I remember watching Martin Lawrence on Def Comedy Jam numerous times. The great late Bernie Mac was on there. I mean, Chris Tucker. Yeah. I mean, what's your take on those platforms?
I mean, again, man, such a unique time for, you know, African-American comedy at that, you know, in the 90s, you know, those shows were just popping off. And, you know, of course, Def Comedy Jam with HBO being, you know, the Netflix of their time, like it was the go-to spot. Like everybody had to be on, you know, you had to watch it. And the show was just edgy, and it allowed us to be who we were. We didn't have to fix, because comedy before then was one where we mainly you know, owned our craft and our talents in white comedy clubs. And so that's all it was. And then once we had this kind of, you know, this brand of comedy that was all about being culturally real, you know, it just blew up. And that's when I think you saw the magic of so many talented people be able to appear on the scene, and people were able to be authentically themselves and write jokes like that. And so, you know, it was one where I say, you know, I came out one of the greatest classes of comedy of all time. You know, I mean, of course, there's legends like, you know, Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy, and then, you know, Damon Wayans.
Right.
Guys were a little bit ahead of us. But, you know, from that Def Comedy Jam era, like you said, you know, it was me and Martin and Jamie Foxx and Steve Harvey and Bernie and Chris Tucker, and you can just start firing them off like legends that's still around, you know, like people still doing their thing. D.L. Hewley, like people still out there doing it, you know. And so that was great. And then Comic View did the same thing when, you know, I ended up becoming the host of Comic View. And I always say that, too, that during those years, you got that next generation, Earthquake and Samoa and Bruce and another, you know, and there's Jay, a lot of lot of legendary dudes that came out of that era, that people that still still around, still doing it at a big level.
Exactly, man. The original Kings of Comedy, how was it recording with other greats as yourself? And are there any funny stories you remember offhand about you guys being together?
You know, that was rough. rock star comedy, man. We always say that that was just a time where we were out there like the Rolling Stones, man. So, but I remember one of my favorite stories is that I used to go first on the tour, so I used to have all the, you know, and I was the only one that wasn't married at the time, and so I would have all the, you know, I'd get all the girls and all of the rappers and everybody be back in my room on the intermission. And so I remember one time, like, I had everybody in my room and Bernie Mac came in. He was like, damn, this is where the party is. And so he started doing comedy. He ended up doing a 5-minute set in my dressing room. Just lit everybody up, going around the room. I remember E-40 was in there, Too Short was in there, Gary Payton. He was lighting people up, and he just turned around and walked out. Everybody was like, oh, it was just classic.
When you're doing your movies, how's your transition of getting into the role of your character? Because you play so many different characters on, like, basically every week you're doing a new project. How's your transition grown or eased you into playing a different role?
You know, probably the biggest thing, I used to just kind of like, I always tell, like, young actors this, that you got to put in that work, because I used to just really count on my natural ability, right, to go and just turn it on and go. But in 2010, I did Broadway, and I had a short run with doing the show American Buffalo, but it was the most experience I learned about being an act, like, really, like, you know, understanding, like, where your character is coming from, what his background is, and developing that out. So now I like to really kind of spend time, and luckily for us, we got the internet now, so if you're playing any kind of character, you can just kind of look up, like, all right, cool, I want to be, this character is supposed to be a politician. Let me just kind of look up mannerisms of different politicians and I think I want to play him more like young Jesse Jackson than old Jesse Jackson. Or, when before Barack got, to this stage, I'm looking for these nuances of how they holding hands and what they do. And so you can find yourself, but put the work in, like, really study so that when you come on the screen, that you're authentic, so that people believe that you actually are that person. Right. And that's the hard thing, and the great thing about great actors. Even when you see people that they got their go to moves. I always say, like, Denzel got a go to move. You know it's Denzel when you're looking at him.
Right.
But when he turned into Malcolm X, you believed he was Malcolm X. It was no doubt about, like, oh yeah, even though that's Denzel, he's Malcolm X right now.
Right. Definitely. I mean, you're so great. You still work on your craft, man. You're a great inspiration, man. You really are.
I appreciate it, man.
So, can you give us your take on the great late Bernie Mac and what he brought to the game, the comedy game?
Yeah, man. B-Mac was raw and like, again, a Midwest dude. So he's from Chicago. So he's just so full of heart, man.
Right.
And one of my great memories, other than that story about in the Kings, but when I was young, the first time I was doing Def Comedy Jam, it was Bernie's second time. And so I remember that, I went to lunch with him and I was, coming from St. Louis, so I kind of identified with the whole Midwest vibe. And we was at lunch and he was just telling me, man, you can't get intimidated. The thing about, when you come from the Midwest, especially at that time, New York was a place, and the people and the hubris of their attitude made you feel like you were inferior, because people be like, I'm from New York, son. Like, you ain't from nowhere. I'm from New York, B.
Right.
He was like, right. And, you can buy into that. And so he was just like, man, you just be yourself. You go out there and understand that these people from everywhere, even though they claim New York, they mama's from South Carolina, they sister, he just made it very clear. So the idea that, that he was able to get that advice out, and he wanted to do that, and he just was real supportive. And then of course he went out and did the greatest 8 minutes of comedy ever, that I Ain't Scared of You Motherfucker show.
Yeah, yes, that's classic.
And, it's like literally made him like the most famous dude in America. matter of seconds. He was like, one minute he was with us and we was all together. Next minute he was like, hey, man, somebody get Bernie to tell him to say it out here. You know, like, man, I just ain't lunch with the dude. I can't got his number no more. Like, he that dude? Yeah, that fast, man.
Crazy. When you first started, you did the Steve Harvey Show with Steve Harvey. How was it working with him?
Yeah.
And how do you say that show helped your career?
Oh, definitely. Again, another great, relationship that happened to me. I met Steve, out on the road, grinding. I was actually stuck in Dallas, and I was there to do another gig, and the gig decided they didn't need me, and so I was stuck, and then Steve had he had a black comedy night, and I went by, and he put me on stage, I went up, killed it. He said, well, come back each night. If you do it, I might be able to put a little something in your pocket so you can get home, and he did. So he gave me $200. I was able to get to the crib, and then he booked me to come back as a headliner like 4 months later. So, I mean, that was just, and that formed a lifelong friendship. And so, and then doing the Steve Harvey Show was the same thing, man. We laughed all day. We were doing the Kings of Comedy at the same time.
Right.
So we would go out on the weekends, be together, come back on Mondays laughing, talking trash. I just talked to him the other day. So, I mean, it's still one of them lifelong relationships that just kind of lock in and you just become boys. And, again, that show it still resonates and still sits well. People love to walk when they see me. Where La Vida and Sandy Jackie Robinson. And it's just one of the things you'll never live down.
You've done a lot of great projects. One of your current projects, The Neighborhood, is going strong on CBS. How's it working with Tichina Arnold and the rest of your character?
I mean, again, another, the opportunity I've had to work with so many great performers and other people is, again, I say it's a testament of the hard work you put in, and then, this opportunity of looking for the right person. But Tichina, of course, we all know her from Martin fame, but then she's done so many other great works, even, on Survivor's Remorse that we used to be on Stars, but she's great. She's so super talented. She's loving. She comes in, with this kind of, always spreading gifts and talking to, she's from New Jersey, so she be talking a gang of trash. The stuff you used to be surprised for a girl, she could talk so much trash. And then, but she's a sweetheart, man. But also, I always look for this, especially, as producer on the show,
right.
I look for people that can, carry the rock whenever you not, on screen. So, that's the one thing big for me. It's like, whenever you the number one on the call sheet, you always had this expectation that you got to be there to make sure that the comedy is happening.
Right.
But when you got people like her and Beth Bears and Max Greenfield, I know that I'm in good hands, that I can throw the rock and that, my teammates going to score the three, somebody going to go in for the dunk, they going to play defense, they do it all. And that's the thing about Tichina and being a veteran that she is. She don't necessarily have to hide a shine on her to kill it. And
right.
Then when she does get a shine, she going to kill it. So, that works, man.
So what originally went into your thought process when you started your own production company, A Bird and a Bear? What went into the name, and what did you have in your mind to bring into reality?
Yeah, The Bird and the Bear is it's me and my business partner, my manager and partner, Eric Rohn, and we met in college, Pledge Kappa together. We've been, when I started my stand-up career, he just kind of came in and just started to help me on his own, like one of these people that just like what I was doing, like what I was about, and was willing to put in the work. And so we, for over 30 years, built something really strong and great. And so they called him Swanee back when we were in college. And then I was Seti the Bear, Seti Bear.
Right.
So we a bird and a bear. So that's how that's where the company name came from. And then the main idea of the production company came from once we were able to know that we could kind of control some of the choices that we were able to make.
Right. Right.
You know, and I was, you know, getting ready to do just a family vacation. We had some other ideas that we were doing. We just wanted to make sure that we had the legal and the proper titles and representation to be able to actually have say so. You know, like, you know, people assume that just because you're the star of the movie that you got, you know, and, you know, as a star, you do got a lot of influence, but
right.
only the producers get the really right to be able to come and go into those upper echelon meetings and say, look, you know, we think we should be marketed this way. We want to make sure that you guys put budget to these kind of things.
Right.
You know, we're not really fond of the director. We want to make sure we want to change that out. And only as a producer do you have that, you know, power. So that's really was the motivation behind us starting our production company.
Yeah, how was it when you got your Hollywood Walk of Fame star?
You know, that was, again, that's kind of surreal, man. You know, I don't know. I told a story that when I first moved to Hollywood, I used to live a block over from Hollywood Boulevard in, you know, just a small apartment, just trying to make it. And I would go up there to get, you know, fine food. You know, they had the restaurants and, you know, a little quick convenience stores kind of stuff that was right there. And so, you know, you walk and you see the stars, you see, you know, pass all these legends, you know,
right.
Lucille Ball and, you know, people you grew up watching, you know what I'm saying, and seeing their names down there, Richard Pryor star, stuff like that. And so you never really envision yourself being there. You know, it's one of these things that you look and go, like, maybe, you know, one day. But so, you know, that day was just really surreal, man, to be able to have so many family members come out. I brought a lot of my family out from Missouri to be there, my dad. And so, you know, it was, you know, and, you know, I'll go by every now and then just make sure ain't no, you know, crazos, you know, Hollywood crazy people out there, you know, defaming it, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Just, you know, brush it off with a little broom and, you know, keep it going. And take a few pictures with the fans. You'd be like, oh, they'd be like, yeah, there you go, that's crazy.
You know, Cedric, one last question. Who's your pick for the NBA championship this year? You got a...
Man, I mean, this, you know, the things, you know, is moving all around, but it feels like, you know, I think Toronto is going to have an opportunity to be there this
okay.
year, you know, for real. And you know, and it may be a surprise on the West. That's what I'm sure. I mean, everybody kind of looks, but, you know, to a degree, I hope there's a little bit of change. So I'm going to go with the Rockets.
Okay.
I don't know if they got that real fortitude to, you know, to beat Golden State in seven games, if ever they had to, and, you know, in the semis. But,
right.
you know, last year they were so close until CP got hurt.
Definitely.
So, I mean, I'm looking just for a little bit of a change in the culture of the NBA right now. It feels like, you know, after a while it gets a little mundane. I know I love dynasties like anybody else, but, you
yeah.
know, after a while you're just like, all right, man, come on, man. Give me somebody else up there. It's like watching the New England Patriots go every year. I'm like, I don't want to see them play again. Like, so,
yeah.
you know.
Go to Steve on some Monstar
stuff. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, the West is going to be the most interesting because I'm also a big fan of Portland Trail Blazers as well on
right.
some just on some, well, some dark heart stuff, you know what I'm saying? And but, yeah, I mean, I like that West, man. It's just
okay.
a lot of fun teams that's playing, including OKC. You just never really know what's going to happen. The East Coast, you know, it feels like, you know, again, you know, it could be a little bit movement in there, but that's one thing about the Raptors. Who you got? Who you got? That's the question.
I mean, right now, I mean, unless they get a lot of injuries, I'll go to State. I mean, I think the Rockets have the best chance of taking out Golden State. Well, I think, say, the Rockets or Golden State come out of the West, one of those two.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Cedric, thank you so much for this interview. We have to do this again when you're available. I mean, thank you so much for your time. Marla, thank you also.
Ain't no doubt, man. Appreciate it. I'll holler, bro.
Yes, that was episode 119 of the NBA Panel. I was joined by the great Cedric the Entertainer. Oh, my God. Thank you for coming through, Cedric. And that's going to bring us to a close. Catch you next week.